When was Jesus born? When did he die and rise from the grave? And what does the timing of these events have to do with Christian theology and practice for the last 2,000 years? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December is titled, When Was Jesus Really Born? It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or you can check out When Was Jesus Really Born at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, When Was Jesus Really Born? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin on this Tuesday afternoon, December the 3rd. Here's a story for you. See if you could follow me. I'm having a hard time following me on this particular story. A lesbian couple decide that they want to be married, so they go to California, to San Francisco, and they are married there in the state of California that does recognize same-sex marriage. They move back to their home in Mississippi, I believe. It doesn't work out. The marriage, I put that in quotes, the marriage fails. They want a divorce. But Mississippi doesn't recognize same-sex marriage, so it follows, naturally, that they wouldn't grant same-sex couples a divorce since they don't recognize the marriage legally in the first place, and they want their divorce. But thereby, it would also require the state of Mississippi to recognize their marriage. Now, it's not an attempt, as far as I can tell, to get same-sex marriage in Mississippi through the back door, but it does present a problem. So joining us to talk about same-sex marriage and, in this case, same-sex divorce, Dr. Jennifer Roback Moore. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she is author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
I want you to react to something that one of the parties in this hoped-for divorce in Mississippi has said here, since Mississippi will not grant her her same-sex divorce. And this is from one of the parties, Chakala Chatham. She says, it's humiliating to know that you spend that money, that time to be in a committed relationship, and for it to end. I mean, that hurts. But then to be in a state that doesn't recognize you as a human being, or recognize you for who you are, or who you love, it's hard. I'm not treated like the neighbors next door. I'm treated like a second-class citizen. How do you respond?
Well, I think that this is a lot of histrionics. I mean, who's not treating her like a human being? I mean, that's over-the-top rhetoric designed to hide the basic truth here, which is that there can't be marital property in a state where there is no marriage. If you don't recognize marriage, there can't be marital property. You can't be giving alimony to people who aren't, in fact, married. And to dissolve the relationship, there are all kinds of ways to dissolve relationships. People are in all kinds of different relationships that break up all the time. That's why you have property law. That's why you have contract law. These two women do not have any children that they claim are theirs jointly. And the issue at dispute, as far as I can tell, was who was going to own the house and whether or not this lady whom you quoted there was going to receive alimony from the woman that she was living with. And so, you know, there's no issue here, it seems to me, of her being treated like a second-class citizen. The state of Mississippi says you guys aren't married, and so you can't use the divorce courts to dissolve a relationship, which can be dissolved in any of a number of other ways. So it's just over-the-top stuff designed to elicit an emotional response from the listener so that you, the listener, will go along with the conclusion that she's trying to get you to draw. But it's basically, in my opinion, that statement is just one big blob of emotional manipulation, and people shouldn't fall for it.
Now, in fact, at least according to the news reports, the couple could return to California and procure a divorce there. But the attorney says that the property, the marital property, would remain in limbo. And he says precisely because Mississippi won't recognize the same-sex marriage, therefore the divorce. Is this an attempt to usher same-sex marriage, or at least a recognition of same-sex marriage, into the state of Mississippi?
I think it is. I think that's exactly what it is, because, you know, if you read further down in the article, there are right-to-divorce cases seem to be popping up around the country, you know, in Texas and in Arkansas and places where there is no same-sex marriage, but same-sex divorce cases are coming up. So I would be astonished if this were not part of a plan, okay, we'll look for a case that we think will work, where we think we can get some kind of legal recognition of the relationship. Even if we can't get same-sex marriage, at least we can get the state to recognize same-sex divorce. And they're using, they're using the arguments and the language that were in the Windsor case that overturned the DOMA. So I think it's pretty clear that that's what it is, Todd. I mean, they're not coming right out and saying that, but I think that's the case. And you know, her lawyer saying, well, the marital property would remain in limbo. Well, what exactly is the marital property in this case? I mean, what are the assets that can't be divided? The plaintiff in this case. I'm not sure what you call her in this situation, but what that person's client was asking for was for alimony to be paid. So, you know, it would be like, you and your producer are friends and your friendship breaks up and, Jeff demands that you pay him alimony, you know, just because you're not friends anymore. You know, there's no reason for the state to be involved in separating that relationship. And also, I'm not seeing it in this particular article that you sent me, but it seems to me in one of these cases, I'm pretty sure it was this case, that the decision to divorce has come about fairly recently. In other words, this marriage broke up in this relationship broke up a couple of years ago, and it's only now that the case is being brought forward. So I think that's a little bit odd. And it's also the case that in this article, that we're talking about here, that the other party in the marriage is the one fighting and saying, no, we don't want a divorce. I don't want a divorce. There isn't a marriage. You know, that person wants to move on and get on. That's the person who really wants to get on with their life, which does not involve getting a divorce in Mississippi, in Helfer, evidently. So I think there's a lot more going on beneath the surface of this story than is being presented in the public view. You know, in other words, you and I can imagine a relationship gone bad where one party wants to kind of extract sympathy or possibly resources from the public at large, and they go forth with a story, and it appears that that's the sort of thing that's going on here. You know, obviously you don't know everything going on just from a news report, but I would be astonished if there was not more of the story than what's in this report here.
The Mississippi Attorney General's office has filed a motion to essentially dismiss the divorce petition in the middle of last month, and they have issued a statement saying Mississippi has no obligation to give effect to California laws that are contrary to Mississippi's expressly stated public policy. What do you make of that statement?
Well, that seems to me to make sense, and it seems to me that's what DOMA was supposed to protect. DOMA was supposed to say that the states can make their own marriage law, and that's what, you know, the so-called federalist arguments that the advocates of redefining marriage have been using all along. Oh, the state should get to make their own marriage law. That was what the Windsor case said. That Massachusetts should get to make its own marriage law, and New York should get to make its own marriage law. Well, how come Mississippi doesn't get to make its own marriage law? You know, and so further down in the article, the attorney trying to argue for a same-sex divorce is saying, well, gosh, they're married under the laws of the United States, but they're not married under the laws of Mississippi, so something has to change here. You know, so it's a crisis, it's a tension that has been created by the law so that it can be resolved in the direction that the radicals want it to be resolved in. And I think that's what's going on here. There are no children involved in this relationship. There's no joint assets here that can't be divided, you know. You can't see what kind of issue there is here, you know, as to why this person should receive alimony from somebody who doesn't even want to live with her anymore. You know, it doesn't make any sense except as a political maneuver.
So, with only about a minute here, you're saying, at least in this case, the logic that was employed by the advocates of same-sex marriage, that every state should be able to make up its own mind, and some states will and some states won't, has at least in this case apparently kind of come back to haunt them.
Well, and that they're trying to resolve that tension in the favor of a nationwide policy of genderless marriage, which has been their objective all along. You know, and so that's what I think is going on. That the strategy has been to get our goals met by any means necessary, and today same-sex divorce is the means that we've chosen to achieve our objective. And I don't think there's anything more complicated than that, I'm sorry to say.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. You'll find a link to the Ruth Institute and the blog there at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Thanks, Jennifer.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., concluding our series on the Christ-centered life. We've talked about going to church. We've talked about reading, studying Holy Scripture. We have talked about prayer. We're going to talk about vocation when we come back. The life of, well, labor, the work that is done by the Christian. It's not an unspiritual thing. In fact, it is sanctified by God's word as well. We'll talk about vocation with Pastor Heath Curtis, concluding our series on the Christ-centered life in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. Then we'll spend some time with Bob Perry. There is, well, to come to a conclusion, many people don't know what to do themselves anymore. Breaking Bad was a long-running series. It was tragedy written large, wasn't it? I mean, it was, you could not wait until the next time that Walter White come Heisenberg appeared on the screen. What kind of compromise would he be forced to make? And how did this man who was once so unassuming become a moral monster? Well, we're going to talk about the moral realism and relativism in the recently ended series Breaking Bad. Bob Perry, author of an article in the latest Christian Research Journal titled Breaking Bad's Addicting Defense of Moral Realism, will be our guest. Stay tuned.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Folks, there are only 4 weeks left in 2013, and we're $64,000 short of making budget this year. Please consider making a year-end tax-deductible gift to support this worldwide outreach. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org. You can also donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
Do you want a church with a rockin' band and a sermon series to help you live a better life? It's not here. Bethany Evangelical Lutheran Church in Fairview Heights offers authentic, historic Christianity to a world awash in fads and entertainment, and offers forgiveness of sins to people overwhelmed with guilt and shame. Join us Sundays at 9:30 on Old Collinsville Road in Fairview Heights, Illinois, to receive the life-giving gifts of God with us. Find out more online at bethanylcms.org.